Show me the way.
Episode 21.
The GC's M&A Part 2. This episode is a follow-up or part two of our conversation with Chuck Williams about his experiences as Senior Vice President and General Counsel of a large national specialty contractor, specifically concerning the strategy and process that has guided his company when acquiring a business and the success his company's had in adding tuck-ins to their platform. Welcome to Show Me the Way, a podcast presented by Spencer Fane LLP concerning business, succession planning, the merger and acquisition experience, and successful exits. I'm your host, Dave Sider. Before we dive into today's captivating discussion, for any of you podcast listeners out there, I have a feeling you'll be interested in the upcoming BEI National Exit Planning Conference taking place this August in one of my favorite spots of the world, Denver, Colorado. And to top it off, I will be speaking along with an esteemed panel of top-notch M&A advisors, investment bankers, and financial advisors. Together, we will delve into the current landscape and latest trends we are seeing in the M&A marketplace. If you are eager to be part of this conversation, please mark your calendars and make sure to join us at BEI National Exit Planning Conference this August. Details are available at BEI.com. And with that, let's shift our focus back to the discussion at hand. Joining me again on today's show is Chuck Williams, and this is a continuation of a prior podcast Chuck and I had recently. You may remember that Chuck previously shared his experience and insights in his role as general counsel and a member of his company's acquisition team, and discussed issues such as choosing the right acquisition candidate, negotiating and strategizing with an acquisition target owner, and the process of integrating the target company's human resources to ensure a successful transaction. Chuck previously shared with his thoughts surrounding his company's approach to growth strategies, the strategies and considerations that led to monumental growth, and the process itself, negotiation through closing. Chuck, welcome back to the fun part of our conversation, war stories. And this is the part I always like, because I think this is the stuff that people really relate to more than anything else. In fact, I had a conversation with somebody this week who said they really appreciated the actual stories of people and their events. Do you have any war stories you'd like to share to illustrate some of the successes and frankly, some of the struggles and difficulties that you've had in your time as general counsel?
Hi, Dave. Good to be with you again. Yes. Oh, yes. War stories. Those are what make the dinner parties fun, right? The winners always get better and the losers always get worse as time goes by, it seems.
Good call.
Well, on the negative side, suffice to say that the failures, whether they stopped the deal or were discovered after the closing, always in large part had something to do with culture. It might be the owner not championing the transition correctly, an employee who didn't want to work that hard. And yes, we had people say that to us, or they didn't want to learn new ways to do things. Amazingly, or maybe not amazingly, we knew almost immediately whether the culture fit was going to be good or bad with very predictable results. Also, problems always occurred when we didn't follow our time-tested procedures and processes. We could detail if you have to, but don't deviate from your proven strategy. A few more words on that a bit later. On the good side, maybe my favorite story on the success side involves our acquisition of a company that was completely outside our existing core businesses, or even actually outside the traditional construction industry, but was nevertheless an ideal add. In this instance, we were active in constructing very specialized, ultra-clean interior envelopes for customers in the clean room industry. These facilities, like many manufacturing facilities and power plants, required continuous maintenance and upgrades. It was our goal to find opportunities that permitted us to keep a continuous presence at the facility for maintenance and upgrade opportunities and more. In this particular instance, we became acquainted with a company that was moving very large, delicate, and expensive semiconductor chip manufacturing equipment at the site. Individual pieces of equipment that were bigger than a car and cost millions of dollars. This company had an almost permanent presence in the clean room facility. The clean room business was not this company's core business, which was actually the printing business. However, both the printing and the clean room businesses required moving around complicated and heavy machinery. We didn't know anything about the printing business. We were not interested in the printing business, but we were interested in the company because of its equipment moving specialty. And this acquisition greatly expanded our opportunities in the clean room industry throughout the country. Now that to me was some impressive out-of-the-box thinking by our visionary leaders. We had other similar experiences where we integrated new businesses that would complement our existing businesses. We bought a scaffolding business as it was complementary to our current insulation business. We acquired a demolition business to complement our existing abatement business. And we acquired a painting and coating business as a complement to help us stay at industrial facilities through ongoing maintenance. Our more familiar story would be when we acquired an existing business in a new locale that expanded the national footprint of our existing business. Our greatest successes came when the owner stayed with us for 1 or 2 years and helped guide the transition. And we've also had numerous success stories where we found high quality people in these new businesses who eventually served in higher up in executive capacities in other parts of our business, thus greatly expanding our talent base.
You know, Chuck, that is an interesting thought because oftentimes I've seen with businesses, you'll buy a business and the owner sticks around and it just doesn't work because the owner's the owner and it's hard for him to be or she to be an executive, and I really mean an employee. So that's quite a success story for the company.
Well, it was always very important to us in the early stages of our conversations with the owner that he or she understand the importance of the owner's role in the transition. And very often, we found that these conversations created a great benefit to both the owner and our company to have the owner stay for a year or two. Beyond that, it could get a little problematic. Although I will tell you, with our scaffolding business acquisition, the owner of that business stayed with us for another 15 plus years.
Oh, wow.
Passed that segment of the business on to his son. So
wow.
I think that was another part of the great success of our acquisition of that scaffolding business.
Good for you. That's a big win.
Yeah, we really hit a home run with that one. So again, our greatest successes occurred when we purchased an already successful company rather than trying to turn around a failing company. And remember, we could leverage our strength onto those successful add-ons that made them even more successful. Specifically, the scaffolding business was a very successful business when we acquired it, and the acquisition was so successful, we were able to export this regional business to other branches throughout the country. Unfortunately, the demolition and coating acquisitions did not fare so well. Why? Because of a bad cultural fit, and because those businesses were struggling, and we tried to turn them around. It's probably an obvious point, but we found that the strength of the culture seemed always to be a very strong factor in predicting the success of the business.
But on the whole, you had much greater number of successes than you did difficulties, it looks like. And you're not going to bat 1,000, or at least, you know, it's always good for people to know and the listeners that you don't hit on all of these acquisitions. But I would say, what, 80%? Maybe that high?
Yeah, I would say that's a good percentage. And I would attribute that to our finding the right candidate for acquisition, sticking to our profile, and building off our prior successes.
Excellent. Good insight. I appreciate, Chuck, the overview of what you've seen over the years with the business. Let's kind of summarize this. Can you bring out 2 or 3 pieces of advice that you would give to our listeners in dealing with, you know, really buying or selling businesses? What would you have them walk away going, that is the golden ticket, so to speak?
Sure. Number one always is keep the faith with your acquisition candidate profile. And I think that applies equally whether you're the buyer or the seller. If you're the buyer, you have a specific type of candidate that you're looking for, a specific profile, size, sector of business, etc. The seller also has a profile of the buyer for the business. And everything that we're talking about, cultural fits, et cetera, apply equally whether you're the buyer or the seller. So don't deviate from your profile except in extraordinary and well-researched circumstances. You've worked hard on that to choose your right profile, and you chose it because your experience told you that this profile had the greatest chance of success. So it's easy and tempting to get away from your profile in your search for the right candidate, but it's even more tempting and more common and more dangerous to deviate midstream during the negotiation stage. Trying to deviate midstream from either the process or the profile so you can close the deal is almost always a bad thing. Yes, you need to stay flexible in the details of the transaction, and you do tweak the details if appropriate, but stay true to your profile. If you decide that changes are needed, take it up in the postmortem, which is the next piece of advice. That is, always do a postmortem. Take the lessons learned from each acquisition and improve your strategies and processes. And remember, most of these lessons learned will also be applicable to situations other than acquisitions. Our most common mistake was trying to turn a failing or mediocre company around. We knew early on that there were serious issues, but we kept trying to make it work. However, all we accomplished was lengthening the timeline for the inevitable failure. I previously mentioned three very specific examples where we, despite our rock-solid process, tried to make it work in spite of the internal alarm bells. So yes, we were occasionally guilty of not following our own advice.
You know, in fairness, Chuck, I've seen that before where people will come in and say, I can make this company work that hasn't worked for quite a long period of time, or maybe with multiple owners for short periods of time. But at the end of the day, the question is to drill down and find the nugget of gold, you know, or find the diamond in the coal dust and then pull that out. That's usually where I've seen over the years people will go in and do an asset purchase to take something of value out and perhaps leave the rest of the company to other individuals to deal with. So again, that's good advice. I have seen very few people taking failed businesses and make them successful.
Yeah. And that's, you know, one of the reasons we always worked with an acquisition candidate on an actual project as a joint venture or in some other form before we started talking seriously about an acquisition. We wanted to see what that business was like on the inside, what the culture was like, what the processes were, how could we leverage our strengths into that business to make it a more successful business. You know, sometimes we would learn halfway through that our initial gut feeling was not correct, but we had a pretty good rate of success because of our process. And a large part of our process started with the absolute requirement that we work with a candidate on an actual project before we started engaging in acquisition discussions.
Okay, there is a major bingo, as I call it, takeaway. Try to do a joint venture, some kind of a collaborative partnership of some sort so you can test drive them, as it were. It's almost like the theory you go to the dealership, you know, and test drive the car. Maybe you used to do that. I don't know if they do that anymore, given the way you can buy things online, but great advice. That, ladies and gentlemen, that is a little bingo here for you folks to take away. I haven't heard a lot of people successfully do it. A lot of people talk about it, but good call.
Going back to the car analogy, Dave, unfortunately, when you do an acquisition like this, you don't get 7 days to renew.
There is no lemon law, so to speak, where you...
You might buy a lemon.
Yeah.
But not if you do your homework and not if you follow your process.
Right.
So finally, the last thing I mentioned, and I keep mentioning it again, is culture. I keep bringing up culture. Speaking from the buyer side, I've talked about the cultural fit of the acquisition candidate being welcomed into the fold of the buyer. But just like I talked about the profile being applicable to both the owner, the buyer, and the seller, the right cultural fit is just as important to the seller, the owner, and the employees to celebrate the owner's legacy and to ensure a successful future.
And there's absolutely no question about that. I have seen so many times, especially if there is a financial buyer, like a private equity group, who knows nothing about the business, comes in and buys the company. And there always seems to be a struggle about understanding the culture and the way the business operates. It just creates a lot of tension and anxiety for the sellers. I think the good news for Chuck, for your company, is you were strategic buyers. You were buying into, for the most part, into the same business model the seller was operating in, so you could appreciate the selling entity for what it is. Well, Chuck, thank you for wrapping up our extended interview, our phase two, our part two. I know that there's a lot of walkaways. We got a little bingo. We got some more insights from you on lessons, some of the successes and some of the failures. And I'm sure that the listeners will appreciate all that you've had to bring forward to us. If you are in search of assistance, please go to davidsider.com and schedule a free consultation. Also, make sure to subscribe to the show. Please reach out and rate it. Leave me a comment on your favorite podcast platform, such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Again, Chuck, thank you so much for your time today and your willingness to come back on the show.
Well, thank you, Dave. It's been a pleasure talking to you again.
Bye until next time. This podcast is provided for educational purposes and does not constitute legal advice and is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship. The recommendations contained in this podcast are not necessarily appropriate for every individual or business. In determining the best course of action, business owners should consult with an attorney on their distinct circumstances.